Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald. May Day, Chapter 6. At 1 o'clock, a special orchestra, special even in a day of special orchestras, arrived at Delmonico's, and its members, seating themselves arrogantly around the piano, took up the burden of providing music for the Gamma Psi fraternity. They were headed by a famous flute player, distinguished throughout New York for his feat of standing on his head and shimmying with his shoulders while he played the latest jazz on his flute. During his performance, the lights were extinguished, except for the spotlight on the flute player, and another roving beam that threw flickering shadows and changing kaleidoscopic colors over the masked dancers. Edith had danced herself into that tired, dreamy state, habitual only with debutantes, a state equivalent to the glow of a noble soul after several long highballs. Her mind floated vaguely on the bosom of her music. Her partners changed with the unreality of phantoms under the colorful shifting dusk, and to her present coma it seemed as if days had passed since the dance began. She had talked on many fragmentary subjects with many men. She had been kissed once and made love to 6 times. Earlier in the evening, different undergraduates had danced with her, but now, like all the more popular girls there, she had her own entourage, that is, half a dozen gallants had singled her out or were alternating her charms with those of some other chosen beauty. They cut in on her in regular, inevitable succession. Several times she had seen Gordon. He had been sitting a long time on the stairway with his palm to his head, his dull eyes fixed at an infinite spark on the floor before him, very depressed, he looked, and quite drunk. But Edith, each time, had averted her glance hurriedly. All that seemed long ago. Her mind was passive now, her senses were lulled to trance-like sleep. Only her feet danced, and her voice talked on in hazy, sentimental banter. But Edith was not nearly so tired as to be incapable of moral indignation when Peter Himmel cut in on her, sublimely and happily drunk. She gasped and looked up at him. "Why, Peter!" "I'm a little stewed, Edith." "Why, Peter, you're a peach, you are. Don't you think it's a bum way of doing when you're with me?" Then she smiled unwillingly, for he was looking at her with owlish sentimentality, varied with a silly, spasmodic smile. "Darling Edith," he began earnestly, "you know I love you, don't you?"
"You tell it well."
"I love you, and I merely wanted you to kiss me," he added sadly. His embarrassment, his shame, were both gone. She was a most beautiful girl in the whole world, most beautiful eyes, like stars above. He wanted to apologize first for presuming to try to kiss her, second for drinking, but he'd been so discouraged because he had thought she was mad at him. The red fat man cut in, and looking up at Edith, smiled radiantly. "Did you bring anyone?" she asked. "No." The red fat man was a stag. "Well, would you mind? Would it be an awful bother for you to take me home tonight?" This extreme diffidence was a charming affectation on Edith's part. She knew that the red fat man would immediately dissolve into a paroxysm of delight. "Bother? Why, good Lord, I'd be darn glad to. You know I'd be darn glad to." "Thanks, loads. You're awfully sweet." She glanced at her wristwatch. It was 1:30, and, as she said 1:30 to herself, it floated vaguely into her mind that her brother had told her at luncheon that he worked in the office of his newspaper until after 1:30 every evening. Edith turned suddenly to her current partner. "What street is Delmonico's on, anyway?"
"Street? Oh, why, 5th Avenue, of course."
"I mean, what cross street?"
"Why, well, let's see, it's on 44th Street.
This verified what she had thought. Henry's office must be across the street and just around the corner, and it occurred to her immediately that she might slip over for a moment and surprise him, float in on him, a shimmering marvel in her new crimson opera cloak, and cheer him up. It was exactly the sort of thing Edith reveled in doing, an unconventional, jaunty thing. The idea reached out and gripped at her imagination. After an instant's hesitation, she had decided. "My hair is just about to tumble entirely down," she said pleasantly to her partner. "Would you mind if I go and fix it?"
"Not at all."
"You're a peach." A few minutes later,
Wrapped in her crimson opera cloak, she flitted down a side stairs, her cheeks glowing with excitement at her little adventure. She ran by a couple who stood at the door, a weak-chinned waiter and an over-rouged young lady in hot dispute, and, opening the outer door, stepped into the warm May night. The end of Chapter 6 of May Day, as originally published in Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit to Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.